We've all heard it before. It's who you know. Now, hear why it's so true. Welcome to Social Capital, the weekly podcast where we dive into social relationships and how the investment you put into them establishes trust, reciprocity, and value within your networking community. Your host, Lori Hybe, will connect with top professionals and dive into their best networking stories and techniques to share with you.
Hey everybody, Lori Hybe here. Welcome to the Social Capital Podcast. Our show notes are found at socialcapitalpodcast.com. You can also follow me on Twitter at LJ Hybe and on Facebook. This week's guest is Sean Tepper. Sean is a software consultant turned investor. As a consultant, he served companies including GE, Kohl's, and Direct Supply. He began investing in 2011, but started taking investing more serious in 2016. Today, his portfolio consists primarily of value investments in publicly traded companies, as well as angel investments in select private companies. Today, he serves as the head of engineering at Swirl Insurance Services, a SaaS platform in the insurtech sector. Sean, welcome to the show.
Thanks for having me, Lori. I'm excited to be here.
I'm excited for you to share your story about software consultant turned investor.
Sure, absolutely.
Why don't we start right there? Why did you decide to transition from a consultant to an investor?
Sure. Well, in 2006, I started it was kind of like a software slash website slash video firm and did that for about 4 years. Until it merged with a larger company in 2010. And I have to admit, I was never a big fan of the business I started. It was kind of a frustration. And one of the biggest points of frustration was the limited scalability of a service business. And I was, during those 4 years, I was doing a lot of homework on the quick scalability you find within tech businesses, especially software platforms. So sometime in 2011, I separated myself from the firm which we merged and focused 80% of my time on consulting, software consulting, and then 20% of my time I would angel invest in tech businesses. Sometimes it was capital investments and sometimes it was sweat equity. Mm-hmm. But over that time, that's when I really discovered what I love to do, which is investing. And then in 2016 is when I started to do a lot of homework with value investing in public companies. And that's when I really discovered this is what I love. I really love investing at that high level.
Cool. Good to find your passion.
Absolutely.
So how has networking influenced your investment decisions?
Well, through the years, I've networked with a lot of tech-focused people, a lot of software engineers, project managers, tech leaders. And I just love hearing the stories about their product, their journey, the successes, the failures. Through those years, I was able to work with a few of these individuals. Sometimes I'd find some success and sometimes some failures, but I learned from it all. And it's really been helpful to connect with people not just here in the Milwaukee area, but also on the East and West Coast and find out what's working, what's not working, and then kind of write down all the notes and really collect all the data related to what really drives the massive scalability of a tech business or software platform.
So, you know, when you hear the word investing, at least me, I feel like there's some level of fear to get into that space. Mm-hmm. And it's very intimidating. I mean, you just think of like Wall Street, right? And they don't necessarily have the most positive history at times or as of late. Where's the best place to start if someone was interested in learning more about investing?
Well, there's two angles you can go in my opinion, for the type of investing I do. So for private companies, which is I'm involved with one company now, Swirl Insurance Services. Mm-hmm. A great place to start is like a local tech networking group. Like Milwaukee has Startup Milwaukee, which is a great place to start. There are similar groups all around the country that you can get involved with. With those groups, you can connect with highly motivated entrepreneurs. You can connect with venture capitalists, some angel investors. So really keep your pulse on the private sector of investing. That's a great place to start. And then for public companies, you bring up a good point. It can be very intimidating for people because 90% of the people who actually invest in the stock market lose money. Mm-hmm. So how does somebody like a Warren Buffett, Charlie Munger, Ray Dalio, how do they experience the large returns? And the best place to start there is you want to connect with an experienced, a truly experienced value investor, or connect with somebody that works within a hedge fund. Milwaukee doesn't have a whole lot of hedge funds, but you can certainly connect with people in Chicago. It's going to be the nearest city where you could connect with people in that kind of line of work.
What kind of questions would someone ask? I'm asking because of my own ignorance.
Sure, sure.
I imagine maybe some of our listeners are wondering the same thing.
Sure.
What kind of questions do you ask to even just help build that relationship and show interest and I guess,
sure,
taking it to the next step beyond just connecting with someone in that space already?
And I have to admit, I did not start my path to investing by networking.
Okay,
I had
sure.
to do a lot of homework. I listened to a lot of podcasts,
okay.
read a lot of books. But I imagine a great place to start is simply connect with these people and just ask if you can take them out for lunch or mm-hmm. Jump on a phone call with them and learn about how do you value businesses, really find that out. Because
okay. One,
there's so many rules in investing. You never want to pay full price for a stock. So how do these people value a business so they know they're buying it, quote unquote, on sale? There's also how do you create discipline around removing your emotions from the equation? That's probably the biggest reason why 90% of the people out there lose money when they invest is they are emotionally attached to the money they invest, and you have to separate your emotions from the equation. It's not easy.
Sure. No, it's not.
We all saw what happened about a year ago with Bitcoin investing. All these people were jumping on the bandwagon. A lot of people lost money mm-hmm. because it's emotionally driven. You have to learn how do you train yourself to not become attached to the investments you make?
Yeah, that's a really good piece of advice, is removing the emotion
mm-hmm.
because it's, in a way, it's a business or financial decision, right, that you're making. And you do want to make intelligent decisions and not emotionally fueled decisions.
Exactly.
For the most part, I would
right.
say.
Exactly. Exactly. Yeah.
Yeah. Good input. Obviously, the show is about networking.
Mm-hmm.
And,
Let's talk about networking.
I know that when you and I reconnected not too long ago, you had a great story that you shared with me. And if that's the one you share, great. If not, I'm sure you've got another one. But share with our listeners your most successful or favorite networking
sure.
experience that you've had.
Well, share the story that brought me to where I am today with the company I currently work for, which is Swirl Insurance Services. A few years ago, I connected through a network. It was an IT company to an individual by the name of Terry Wakefield, and he's been doing consulting and was part of many businesses over the last 40 years in the mortgage and real estate industry. And he's made a lot of great connections. He's had a few exits that have returned significant capital to investors over the years. And I was able to help him build an analytics software as a service platform, a SaaS platform. And it was a great experience working with him. So, and that was probably, I'd say 2014 or 15. And we've been in touch through the years just to see how things are going on his end.
Mm-hmm.
And he was kind of curious what was going on my end. And without me knowing, in 2017, he spent about a year with one of the co-founders he's located in Chicago. Jonathan is his name. And they did about a year's worth of homework in the insurance space related to property management companies selling insurance to their tenants.
Okay.
And that's where the model, and I won't go into the details of the business model, but
sure.
he connected at the end of December. I was just wrapping up a contract with GE, and he said, hey, I got this new business model. It's a software as a service platform, could be highly scalable. We've got a lot of connections, and you want in. And I'm like, inside, I'm like, yeah, but I wanted to see the projections and
uh-huh.
what this is looking
sure.
like. And within the next week, I made a decision, let's do this.
Okay.
And that was an extremely valuable, the most valuable connection, networking connection I've ever made to date, for sure.
Cool. Valuable, I'm sure, financially and just emotionally with your own relationship too.
It's a business model that I've always wanted to do, highly scalable software platform. And through the years, I've been doing a lot of consulting, but never obtaining like profit sharing in this type of business. So finally, it's like, all right, I arrived. It only took me like 12 to 15 years, but I'm there.
That's okay, right? Magic doesn't happen overnight, right? It takes hard work.
Sure.
That's why it's called sweat equity too. Right?
Exactly.
So I know that with your diverse background, you've met a number of people in lots of different industries and different spaces in their life. So your network's expanded quite a bit. What do you do to stay in front of or nurture your network?
Well, I like to, especially in the Milwaukee area, anybody who's involved in a tech startup, even if it's a completely different sector, like we're more like a B2B to C model, but like a straight up B2C model, think like a Facebook or a Groupon or anything like that. I try to stay in touch with these people, just learn how it's going and how, you know, what struggles are they seeing and what successes are they seeing, and just keeping my finger on the pulse that way. And how I do that is it's really email, phone call, and LinkedIn is how I really stay in front of this community.
Nice. And LinkedIn, any best practices there?
I love LinkedIn. It's one of those things that the search engine itself, it's so easy to find. Like if you want to find a specific, like let's say it's a software engineer with experience in, let's say it's the most boring business model you can think of, like Oracle-like database. You can find specifically talent with that experience.
Yeah.
Or even like somebody who's great at channel sales within the enterprise arena of software. It's great. You can find talent all over. I didn't have LinkedIn, it's like, where would I start, to be honest with you?
Well, it'd be back in the old days, right? You go to events and you ask people if they know anyone. I love LinkedIn too. Mm-hmm. It's a great platform. So what advice would you offer the business professional who's looking to grow their network?
Well, let me touch on the mistakes I made in the earlier days, and then I can kind of tell you what I learned from that. So in my earlier days, especially when I had that first service business, I was connecting with everybody.
Yep.
I'm just going to connect with everybody, every business owner.
Yep.
It could be manufacturing company, real estate, retail, whatever. And I can help them out. And it was like the shotgun approach. I was trying to do too much. So my advice is don't do that. Try to, whatever your niche market is, your audience, try to find organizations, or networking groups, events that are specific to that. So like in my line of work, software and technology, if there's a tech event, that's great. If there's a real estate event, that's even better. But anything else, my audience is not going to be there. So I'm not going to spend the time on it.
So being laser focused.
Exactly.
Which makes sense. And I like that you kind of diversified tech and real estate for you. Mm-hmm. So you're not putting all your eggs in one basket.
Right. Right. Yeah.
Good. Really, really good advice. So digital networking, which you covered a little bit on LinkedIn, but traditional, which is phone and going to the events, which one do you find more value in?
Well, these days, I mostly do digital. It is through LinkedIn, and I connect with individuals all over the country. And it's as simple as I'll reach out just with a message, and it's usually I'll drop a name, one of their current connections.
Sure.
And just thought I'd say hello. You have this line of business. I'll do a little homework on them. I notice you have this type of business model that serves this audience. I'd love to learn more.
Yep.
And get on the call with them. And there are times I expect the call to be 10 or 15 minutes, but it's turned into an hour because we're just talking about what works and what doesn't work in the software business. But it's surprisingly easy through LinkedIn if you can be really specific. And target the people that are into what you're into, you know? So in my line of work, we're all nerds. So we love software, we love technology, and I guess it's common ground right away. In my earlier days, I did find great success with traditional networking in person, but I have to say that it is primarily digital these days.
Cool. So when you're connecting with these individuals across the country, it starts digital. Does it migrate into more of a traditional relationship then, or is it primarily staying in that digital space?
It stays. If there were a business venture deal that were to come together with anybody, like let's say in Silicon Valley or in New York, at that point I would make the trip to see them, but it hasn't evolved at that point.
Sure.
Swirl is, fortunately, that's based here in Milwaukee, and we haven't done any national travel yet.
Okay. So. All right. Well, that makes sense. Absolutely. I mean, big transactions and relationships, there is that face-to-face that's beneficial. All right. Here's a fun one.
Yep.
Sean, if you could go back to your 20-year-old self, what would you tell yourself to do more of, less of, or differently with regards to your professional career?
Well, that's an easy one. I did not know my true passion was investing. And believe it or not, in my 20s and especially my teens, I was not financially responsible.
I'd say most people aren't at that age.
Oh, gosh. I learned a lot. I mean, I was in debt and it was a struggle. And I didn't have any idea how to properly value invest. So I would get on the phone with my 20-year-old self and be like, all right, here are the 50 things or 100 things or whatever you need to stop doing. And here's the things you need to do. I think it'd be a fun conversation, but I think the younger me would be like, who is this guy?
All the mistakes.
Exactly, right?
Okay, you said 50 or 100. Maybe pick one or two that our young listeners might find value in that you could share.
I have found a ton of value with listening to podcasts like The Motley Fool is my favorite.
Yeah,
it's all
a good
about
one.
Investing. We Study Billionaires is another one. The 20-Minute VC, Social Capital.
Ah, nice.
Got a lot of good interviews.
Absolutely.
Start there. And I just did general searches for investing and venture capital within these podcasts. And over the last 3 years, the amount of information I've gained. And I try to listen to podcasts about 2 hours a day and just take in as much information as I can.
Yeah.
If there's great nuggets, I'll have a notepad with me and just write it down right there. So
do you listen at normal speed or do you speed it up?
I do. And I know you brought that question up before.
Yeah.
Like people will go like 1.5x or 2x. And I do like normal 1x.
Okay.
Yeah.
Okay. That's interesting. I like it fast. And then if I 1.5x,
okay.
I can't do any faster than that.
Right.
But in the event it is something meaty, then I'll go back and re-listen to it at a slower pace just so I can really digest it.
Yeah.
But I don't know. I just try to get as much as I can
in a limited
amount of time.
My retention isn't there, but the content's
it's all coming in.
Yeah,
it'll
exactly.
just soak in and then get embedded in the subconscious, and then I'll know it.
Sure. right.
If it really works that way, I don't know. Cool. Yeah, those are great resources. I think podcasting is something that's really been a huge value add for everyone. I mean, it's free content, free education, which, that wasn't available, many years ago.
Right.
Here's another fun question that I always like to ask. So we've all heard of the 6 degrees of separation. Now, who would be the one person you'd love to connect with, and do you think you could do it within the 6th degree?
Well, besides Kevin Bacon, I would have to. I have a lot of respect for Ray Dalio. He runs the largest hedge fund in the world.
Okay.
And if I could sit down with him for an hour and just learn as much about his investing strategies, that'd be amazing. And of course, guys beyond that or behind him would be. Warren Buffett and Charlie Munger, of course, but Ray is really doing some amazing things. So that would be a solid connection.
So do you think you could connect with him in the 6th degree?
Maybe. If If depending on how things go here with Swirl, the goal is an exit within 5 to 7 years. Mm-hmm. That would put my name on the radar a little bit. And there are a lot of investors, of course, I'd like to connect with. And there are probably a few more before him I'd be able to reach. But I think I could do it. I do.
Cool. Yeah. So do you have a starting point?
Well, where I'm at now, which is focus on Swirl and selling this business.
Get some exposure.
Exactly.
Right?
Yeah.
Okay, cool. One of my favorite questions, mm-hmm. and this is because I'm just a knowledge junkie, is to really understand what other books or educational input I guests have. Mm-hmm. So what book are you reading right now?
I actually just finished 0 to 1 by Peter Thiel.
Okay, not heard of that one.
Okay, Peter Thiel he's one of the co-founders with Elon Musk of PayPal. And then Peter was one of the first investors in Facebook.
Oh, cool.
And he's a serious venture capitalist. But his book 0 to 1 is all about, if you're going to create a business at the highest level, be a 0 to 1 business, which is like the first of its kind to the market. So like a Google.
Okay, sure.
A Facebook, an Uber. There are a lot of businesses out there, and I'm still a fan of a 1-2X, whatever that kind of business is, which is like creating a better mousetrap,
sure.
whatever is out there, which is, it's very common. That's a great way to go. But yeah, he really went into detail about how to create that 0 to 1 business.
And I'm very intrigued by that.
it's a cool read. And I have to admit, you gotta have a mind that's kind of like an inventor. You gotta invent that new thing. And I have to admit, I'm not that inventor type mind. I'm more like an engineer optimizer.
Yeah, so, making something better that's already existing.
Yeah, exactly.
That's the model I've definitely.
Yeah.
I can relate to more so, but it is fascinating. So he's mapped out the whole. His process, probably, right?
Yeah, to a pretty good degree. It's a fun read for sure, and he can be a super technical guy. Like if you ever watch him on YouTube or the way he speaks is very eccentric, and some of the tech jargon he uses is people's eyes will glaze over.
Yeah.
But the book is written in a way that it really softened that information.
Cool.
Yeah.
Awesome. I have to add that to my reading list. And I say that with hesitation because my reading list is very long, as you can imagine, interviewing lots of individuals. And, you know, you just meet someone, they're reading a great book, and you're like, oh, that sounds great. I got to add it to my list.
Mm-hmm.
All right. So any final word or advice to offer our listeners with regards to growing and supporting your network?
Yeah, with those that you connect with, especially the individuals that really stand out, create some kind of, whether it's a Google spreadsheet or a doc of some sort to follow up, like make a date and try to create a follow-up date within 3 months or 6 months or whatever. I have to admit, I need to get better at that, but I have read books and heard people say, like, if you can create a follow-up that and stay on people's radar, you know?
Yes.
I think if you can get into a discipline of doing that, that's huge. That's me telling me to do that over this podcast. Better.
Well, you know, I've heard a number of people say that, and there is no magic formula to make that work.
Right.
What's a lot of guests have shared some fantastic little tidbits and tips that they have, or tools, or even as simple as using the Facebook birthday reminder as a means, like, oh, you know what? I'm not going to just do the Facebook standard message. I'm actually going to send them a nice little text message or an email. So I thought that was a good little tip to share.
Oh,
but stay on the radar. I think that's important. Really good advice. All right, Sean. So if anyone was interested in getting in contact with you, what would be the best way that they can reach you?
LinkedIn. And Twitter.
LinkedIn and Twitter. And we will include that information in our show notes. Sean,
perfect.
Thank you so much for taking the time to be on the show today.
Well, thank you, Lori.
This wraps up our episode of Social Capital. A huge thank you to Sean Tepper for taking the time to connect with us. Join us next week for another great guest as we continue the conversation on networking and building your community. If you need me, send an email to Lori@socialcapitalpodcast.com. Otherwise, we'll see you next week.
that's all for this episode of the Social Capital Podcast. Be sure to visit socialcapitalpodcast.com for show notes, more episodes, and to check out our free ebooks on business and networking.